I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
Hey ladies, last episode we talked about the lighter side of COVID-19 and Michelle was ready to go about parents being home with their kids. So now we are back talking about, so your kids are home for a 3-week March break. So Michelle Baduski is a social activist, author, motivational speaker, living in rural Manitoba, just outside of Brandon with her husband and 4 children. And joining us is Meg Rigdon, political agitator turned commentator. Megan Ball Rigdon is a certified recovering Becky, raised by a top-notch ad woman and computer programmer of the 1980s. She has 2 amazing children on the autism spectrum, as well as a husband with Asperger's who constantly inspires her advocacy work. She comes from the Windsor, Ontario area. I, of course, am Leanna Kersner. Ladies, welcome.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, so. I know you both have seen the memes. You both have children. You know, you have children with special needs and this and that. And I haven't heard either of you two complain about having your kids home, but I have read the articles, I have seen the memes, and I'm not parents to anyone but cats and dogs. So Michelle, I'm gonna
start. Steven.
Well, yeah, and Steven, but we don't say you parent one's husband.
I do.
It's true sometimes. Yeah, but Michelle, I'm going to start with you because you were raring to go the last time. What the heck is going on with this? Oh my God, my kids are home for 2 unplanned weeks.
You know, it strikes a chord with me because I get it, right? I am a professional woman. I've worked out of the home my whole life. I've always had a huge respect for stay-at-home moms or stay-at-home dads because it's something I can't do. I know that. It's just not in my wheelhouse. Meg, listening to your bio, like, wow. You know, I have a friend of mine with 2 teenage sons on the spectrum, and I checked in with her yesterday to make sure she was okay, because it's a level of efficiency at the home level that I couldn't even imagine. But it is just such a thorn in my side here, where people are actually complaining about having to be with their children. And I think, you know what, I get it. I get that fear that it's a disruption. But the messages we're sending to our kids when they hear us talk about, oh my God, I don't want to be here, or I hate this, or like, what does that say to them? I grew up in a house where I never felt wanted, never felt loved, and I'll be damned if my kids hear me complain about having to be at home with them.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I was what we used to call a latchkey kid back in the day. But I mean, Meg, before this podcast starts, she sends me this picture, like Meg is rocking it. You know, she's got special
kids. No, I'm not.
Yeah, but she sends me this picture and her kids are sitting on the couch reading My Little Pony books. It looks like just complete domestic bliss. But Meg, you've got a lot going on at your place right now. Like you guys have been tested. You're in self-quarantine. What's going on where you are?
Well, Windsor's a bit of an interesting place to be right now, being a border city. We have a lot of people going back and forth. And as I've talked about, my husband is in a customer service type role, but it has been deemed a somewhat essential service. And as such, we may have been exposed. My daughter also has an exceptional access situation. So she's been in Toronto recently. Oh, wow. And was seeing other kids. So, yeah, we've decided to do the responsible thing. I've got a mom with COPD. And I obviously have a little one, and she does actually have seizure disorder. So it's the responsible thing for ourselves, for our community, to stay home. And yeah, I was going to say, this can be an interesting talk because it is very tough to be in the position that I'm in. However, I totally agree with Michelle. We do need to be cautious about how we are around our kids, because these are exceptional times for us as parents too. But they certainly look to us to model the appropriate responses and behaviors. And I think we have to remember we're the responsible ones. So
yeah, that may be a challenge for some modern quote unquote, you can hear my air quotes in my voice, parents. I find it seems to be the people in sort of the upper middle class end of the spectrum that are saying, oh my God, what am I gonna do? That could be a generalization, but I find that the more working class families are like, well, we're gonna make it work. We always do. It's the sort of the people I used to live around before I moved who have these heavily regimented lifestyles, who are like, what am I gonna do with my kids for 2 weeks? What happens if they miss school for 2 weeks? Now, I wonder what you two ladies think about this, because I was heavily involved. Like, I was doing acting as a teenager. I was a competitive dancer. I was pulled out of school for competitions and plays and jobs all the time. I easily missed 2 weeks of school every year, and I was a straight A student. Meg, you've got exceptional circumstances in that your children require extended therapy because they're on the autism spectrum. How right. much has been cut back, and how are you adjusting?
Well, and I think there is certainly a wide range of perspectives on this from the autism community, because a lot of people were in different positions when it comes to what services they were getting before all this came down. So for me, we actually were just getting into a good spot where we had a few hours of therapy going for both the kids. My son was in a full-time research program, so there was enough stimulus that I was getting quite a bit of respite. I was able to do more advocacy work. Mm-hmm. We were hitting a stride. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it only really started clicking together a couple months ago. So
right.
it's been a big upheaval. And I think that's where, if anyone's been following me on my Twitter, that's where my agitation comes from, because it was like, oh man, things were really clicking. The kids were really making big gains and strides. And now I'm not a professional, but I want to keep pushing, and I'm not the right person really to be doing that. So I'm trying to stay in touch with all of our different providers, but there are like 7 different professionals that I can make contact with. So it's also a lot of work in and of itself. 2 kids, different places on the spectrum. I got to be honest, I said they were reading. They were nicely modeling what reading looks like, but they were looking at the My Little Pony pics. Yeah, exactly. You know what?
Fake it till you make it, man.
Exactly. Exactly. They're 3 and 5, but you know, that's a really important part of how I grew up too. So it's, you know, yeah, really cute when you see them doing it.
Yeah, even if they're looking at the pictures, they're quiet, they're not hitting each other, nothing's getting broken.
Yeah, maybe so, sight words are happening, you never know, right?
There you go. So all the programs, all the extended programs are shut down right now. You're getting nothing.
Yeah, there is absolutely nothing as of basically Friday last week. Everything kind of just ground to a halt. And, you know, we're surviving and it's fun. And I'm just, you know, finding the little things that I can in everyday life. But it is a lot to manage.
Okay, so you heard it here, folks. EB Games, essential retail for video games, because Animal Crossing came out. But autism therapy for children is not considered an essential service. How big are the groups that they're working with for your kids, Meg?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the center we were at, it's a one-on-one. So there's one adult to right. one child. But then you got 8 kids and then there are people. So that's 16 people in a room sometimes when they're all doing circle or song time and things like that. And even when they're split up, you still usually will have about 3 kids to a room. So you've got, it is fairly close proximity. So I can kind of understand. However, we've been really lucky down here in Windsor. They were still seeing 0 cases. We've got some out in the county around in our surrounding area. I can see why. These are fragile kids. In some cases, there's other medical conditions that can coexist with autism. So we really have to be mindful that sometimes there's a little more fragility than we'd have with an average kid.
So it's being shut down out of a concern for the physical health of the children is what you're saying.
Basically, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that's understandable, because I was talking to your husband on Twitter That sounds weird out of context, but
it's okay.
Yeah, I was talking to your husband on Twitter, and he said some of these groups are sometimes there's 100 kids in a center. There's as many as
in different centers. Yeah, we're in a research group, so research is very, very different, and it is a very minimal in terms of how many kids to an adult.
they're
taking so much data, but yes, there are centers where you might have hundreds moving through in a week. So
and that makes sense to me. Like obviously, that's a large number of kids, but you guys are managing, right? There's no meltdowns. The change in routine hasn't impacted them too badly.
Michelle, how are you doing?
Yeah, okay, so there have been issues.
I've had meltdowns and it's impacted them. Yeah. And you know what? I don't have nearly the challenges that Meg does. So hats off to you, Mom.
Oh, no. How are you guys handling the, because you're staying informed. I know both of you are because you're responsible. But staying informed comes with the stress of waiting for like the crest of the wave to hit. How, Michelle, we'll go to you first. How are you managing the stress and the sort of preemptive fear without letting it affect your kids more than it sort of has to?
Well, I've got to be very careful because I spend a majority of my time on social media. I am an activist here in rural Manitoba, and I'm a very strong believer in using my platforms to help keep people informed and kind of debunk a lot of the fake news that we see. We're still heavily on Facebook, so we get the memes, we get all that. So I spend, you know, probably up to 6 hours a day on social media doing that for my platforms. So I can get quite stressed out. And most of the time, what I find is what de-stresses me is information. I understand what's going on. I understand why we're doing what we're doing. So I communicate that to my kids. I am at home. I've been at home for a week now working from home, and I pulled my kids from school. So they've been home with me for a week. So I've got a 6, 8, and 14-year-old at home, and my adult son lives a few blocks away. And so what I've been doing is just talking to them about the facts. This is why we're doing this. So they see the bigger picture and they know that we're doing it for the overall good. So it's not a negative in our house. It's just a fact.
So you're insulating them from something they might get from another source as well. It sounds
absolutely. You know, my daughter she's been on a couple of my podcasts. She's a very bright 14-year-old, but I don't let her on social media. I get enough of the hate for most of us here. She doesn't need that.
Yeah.
Facts are what de-stresses me, you know, knowing the real information and not freaking out about it. But what stresses me out is the bullshit from other people.
Okay.
And the fake news. And it doesn't seem to be, I said on my Facebook page the other day, it's like, you know, emptying the ocean with a tablespoon It's like, every time you post a fact, there's five people there ready to post crap about it. And we have seen that with COVID-19. I mean, it's what started the toilet paper wars of 2020. Mm-hmm. And for me and my kids, it's really important to actually talk to them about what's going on and be as factual. I don't know how long this is going to last. I'm not telling them that they're going back to school April 13th.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I say that that's right now the plan. But we don't know. So I'm trying not to, you know, set up any kind of false hope or false expectations. And I also don't want them freaked out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's very smart. Because with adults, you can pull the, you know, you'll have to wait this long and then say you have to wait longer. Anybody who's been on a delayed flight knows how they pull that crap on us. Mm-hmm. But with kids, you can't do that. And so I think that's a really smart approach. To go, well, this is the plan, but it may change. That way they can't say, you lied to me later on, which kids love to do.
Absolutely.
Meg, how are you handling the not passing off the stress to your kids as much as you possibly can?
Absolutely. It has been very interesting because I deal with anxiety myself. I'm not sure if I mentioned that the previous time we talked, but I mean, it certainly is something I'm always aware of with my kids. And certainly for me, you're right. We have an obligation to stay informed when you have any kind of, I've got like 600 people following me, but when you have people following you, you don't want to put out false information.
Yeah.
So when I'm watching those press conferences, I make sure the kids are out of the room, or I'll put it on audio and just pop it in my ear so that they're literally none the wiser to what I'm listening to or paying attention to. And if I do feel myself becoming overwhelmed, is taking that time, just taking a day, sometimes whatever it is, to step away, if it really does start interfering, because to your point, these are little minds. They absorb everything. They're like little sponges. And I'm the big person. So it's on me to not pass off my fears and anxieties. Certainly now, I mean, we just had my husband swab today. So
yeah,
we are now officially in true lockdown. Anything that we are going to get coming into this house gets dropped on the doorstep. So it's kind of, it's a weird time to be living in, but they don't deserve to carry that stress. And as Michelle said, you can only combat that with facts, which are we're doing the things to keep ourselves healthy. And, you know, it's not a matter of putting fear into them or even talking about the illness, especially at 3 and 5, there's very little understanding. Yeah, so it's just giving them what they need to get through their day. So we're just going to do different activities. We're going to hang out in the backyard instead of going for a walk around the block today. All right. A little bit of a change. That's all it is.
Yeah. It's when it hits you that directly, I mean, I joked the other day to somebody that men who get these coronavirus tests, it's the closest they'll ever come to having a mammogram and waiting for results. Like, you know, that weird twilight you get every time you have a pap test and you're waiting for it to come back and, you know, it's probably nothing, but you're still kind of anxious every single time. Maybe just me, but I think that's the closest men are ever going to come to that. But how are your husbands handling it? Not to, you know, speak out of school. Are they handling it okay? I mean, being tested, Meg, that's a bit scary, isn't it?
I guess it is and it isn't because I live with a heightened sense of anxiety. So with all of this, I kind of go back to the days where I worked at UHN, and I was very fortunate to be there at a time when Dr. Michael Gardam was actually working and giving lectures to the med students that I was placing. So I got to, you know, get a lot of really good factual biological data in my head. And right. I look at all this and that's really what I've been doing, is watching the graphs and watching the trends and saying, I need to see more data. It's clearly really serious, but we also, you know, we don't talk about recoveries as much. We just are in the phase right now where we are doing a majority of testing and we have to wait that period out. I think, again, being locked down is the smart move. Mm-hmm. I think social distancing is the way to go for everybody in general. But yeah, you can't, I guess I don't think it's the time for overwhelming panic.
Right. Now, right? You guys have kids, they sort of range in age. I mean, like you said, you talk to a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old about what's going on more than you talk to, differently than you talk to a 12 or 14-year-old. And Michelle, those, you know, once a kid hits 12, some kids who are really precocious, they hit 10, they start picking up a lot more. Mm-hmm. Have you seen more of a unique challenge with your preteen, or I guess she's a teenager now, than a younger kid would?
Well, it's really interesting because my 14-year-old she's very precocious. She will research. We actually just did a podcast on, she joined me to talk about, you know, from a teen perspective. And she is very much like me, where she will get online and she will research the facts from reputable sources. Mm-hmm. And I actually, almost every day, I watch the federal update and the provincial update here from Manitoba. And she will often watch it with me and we'll talk about it, what that means, so that we have the facts straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Right.
So that she's not, you know, listening to what her friends say. And she actually is correcting them a lot. So she is doing really well. She's a little worried because 14-year-old girl, she's all about the social act, you know, being with her friends.
Right.
And because we haven't been tested. We actually found out that even though I have been ill and showing symptoms, just because of my sinus infection, that we don't qualify for a test. We haven't been exposed that we know of.
Yeah.
We have no cases in our area in rural Manitoba at this point. Where we are, I'd like to keep it that way.
Right.
So, you know, so we've been, you know, not necessarily self-isolating, but definitely keeping strong social distancing measures in place for our family. It's a lot easier to do when it's minus 20.
Yeah.
But it's, my 8-year-old, I found it really interesting that he was already coming home from grade 3 with fake news.
Wow.
You know, he was already coming home saying, I heard that, you know, this coronavirus came from bats.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow, okay, that means the kids are getting it from their parents. You know what? It was just, I chose to pull them out because we do have, you know, I've had a sinus infection for a while, and it's like, they're all kind of snotty and gross. And I'm like, screw this. I pulled them out of school a week early. We just closed today.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm kind of insulating them from that too, because I don't want them freaked out.
Well, that's one of those things that it's got to be infuriating that they're getting that from another kid who got it from an adult, likely their parents.
Yep.
Right. Do you have this moment of, oh, great, my kid's friend's parents are kind of racist.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, yeah. It's, yeah. And then you see it coming from, you know, it's all over, you know, the States, and you're getting it from the American government. And people are not very sophisticated when it comes to social media. It's one of the things that my platform's kind of dedicated to, right, is really trying to kind of take that back. And trying to get people to understand that you can't believe everything you read just because it happens to be on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
So it's scary that it is actually, people don't realize how much their kids are listening.
Mm-hmm. I think that's funny because when my friends' kids are over, I'm always aware that they are, you never know what they're going to pick up on. And the thing you really don't want them to remember is the thing they'll probably remember more than anything else. But Meg, are you finding any of this? I mean, you guys are little, but are you finding any of sort of the knowledge contamination? Like, they're coming home, I heard something from somebody or something like
that? Well, yeah, I was going to say at 3 and 5 on the spectrum, my kids are pretty nonverbal. So we don't really have a whole lot of that, but certainly, right. I respect the heck out of Michelle for everything she's doing, because I know that's a huge part of what my husband does more so than I do. Again, trying to limit the stress, but yeah. He takes on that, as he calls it, like, it's an information inoculation, right? You have to get your information from a couple of sources. Make sure that it's not just a Facebook article. Go yep. and Google it. Look at a few different places. Look at something that's right wing. Look at something that's not. Look at something data-based, right? If I can look at something with a few academics behind it, then I know that that's legitimate. I think there's a lot of will for people that just are tired and they're clicking through online. And to your point, they see it once and therefore it's Bible. And that's just not the way to go when we're dealing with the information age.
I think it's kind of strange too, especially in Canada, since our government website is so good. I mean, I've been on it multiple times a day. There's a little link that says detailed epistemology. I'm always clicking that link. Epistemological summary. There it is. And it gives you all the curves and where the cases are. And I'm constantly looking at that. I actually posted their graph that they have, because it shows, I mean, certain newspapers, I mean, let's face it, they're trying to get their traffic up. So they're posting curves, data, things like that are deliberately designed to look as scary as possible. And these are legitimate news sources, but they're trying to bring in eyeballs, right? Unfortunately, the media right now is trying to change habits in people by grabbing them through search engine optimization, through that Google search, right? Mm-hmm. And so the curve you will see on, say, Maclean's magazine is very different than government or, you know, NGO graphs that show that Canada's curve is not doing that sharp sweep upwards. We sort of got a very chill U. Like, it looks like the way a cat kind of lays there. It's not the scary stuff we're seeing in Italy or the US or anything like that. But I posted the official government chart on Facebook yesterday, and people are like, oh my God, this is the first good news I've seen today. I was starting to get really freaked out. And I'm like, oh man. You know, like,
and it's from the government. Trust it, folks. Like,
I think we're very lucky that we can trust our government. You know, we were saying, and Michelle and I were saying in the previous podcast, that as much as we don't like certain political figures right now, everybody seems to mostly be getting their shit together, you know? And I think that gives us a little bit of peace of mind. We can go back to hating their guts after this is over, but at least it seems like they're cutting the crap when it's necessary. But I want to move on to Meg. What are you doing to basically fill the day? Because, you know, kids with autism and you know, the therapy you're doing, it's so regimented and there's so much routine. How are you filling those gaps on a daily basis?
Man, and would I like to start with an I'm sorry to everyone who has been working with my children and busting their humps over the last little while, because you're right. It's so detailed. Yeah. Those programs are so regimented. Like, I can't possibly replicate that at home. So essentially what I'm doing is trying to follow the schedule as much as I can.
Right.
And so for someone like me, who's got two, I can luckily kind of manage a little circle time, kind of like what you'd see in a daycare. And we can mm-hmm. do sing songs and those kind of social stories together, doing lunches and snacks at the same time. Those kind of things help just keep them in a base routine. And then around right. that, I'm sorry, don't chastise me too much, but I'm using my chore time to kind of use some sensory integration stuff. So if we're, you know, doing stuff at the sink when I'm doing dishes, then that's time that they can be playing with some water and soap bubbles and feeling stuff that's slippery. And
that sounds looking, awesome to me. Right? I love that as a kid.
Yeah. So there's different ways you can go about it. And that's, yeah. I mean, that's one of the ways, having heavy work, sometimes, you know, pushing a laundry hamper across the floor, cause it's got to get from A to B, right?
Like, right.
It's just trying to find ways that I can have them do things with me a little more. And, you know, for someone like me who is connected, sometimes that's, you know, it feels problematic because it means putting down my phone, or sometimes if I'm being bad, I'll just turn it off. I am one of those people who can be a little compulsive, and it's just, for me, I call it being the grown up. It's time to stop. Right.
So that's been your big issue. Not the time with the kids, the time away from your advocacy.
For me, yeah. And I think part of it, to Michelle's point, is combating that there is so much misinformation and, mm-hmm. and sometimes just stuff to keep up on. This has been a very fluid situation. So knowing even just what the numbers are, I mean, that can change two or three times in a day. So
yeah. I mean, we get twice daily updates.
So I'm just trying to keep... Yeah, to your point, I'm trying to remember that I got to be a parent first, and as important and, you know, pressing as this seems, job number one is still the kids.
Yeah, I mean, definitely think you're making the right priority, but that's really interesting. I know I've sort of had I don't even have kids, but it's the same thing. I feel like even though I work from home, I'm not getting as much done because there's so much additional load on the brain trying to make sure everything's clean, and oh, the laundry comes in and it doesn't get all over the house. It goes right down to the basement and all that stuff. And there's two people and a bunch of furballs here. I can't imagine what it's like with you guys. Like, are you in a similar situation, Michelle, where you're constantly washing your hands anyway, so it's not that big a deal, or have you found it's a lot more work?
You know what? I'm more aware. I work from home as much as I can already, but I have had to move my college courses online suddenly, because like you said, everything was really fluid. So suddenly our school year at the college has gotten cut short, and our in-class lectures and assignments all got moved online. So, you know, I'm more involved that way, and finding that balance, just like Meg said, and realizing that, you know, we need to put down our phones. I think, you know, I've been sharing some pictures on my Instagram and stuff that, you know, oh, it's, you know, gym time, because I had the kids downstairs doing yoga, because, you know, that kind of thing. And I think, you know, in retrospect, I'm adding stress to people that unnecessarily, because it's not always like that. I'm not always, you know, this regimented, oh, we're baking. Now we're this Mary Poppins household where everything is perfect. I'm doing the best that I can, and I'm trying, but it's not 24/7, right? It's like, okay, you know what? I'm recording this podcast now. Why don't you guys go park yourself in front of a video game?
Yeah.
You know,
that's been my advice to parents. Like, don't stress. Don't kids are getting too much screen time. It's 3 weeks. After it's not, 3 weeks, we'll worry about it later, right?
Well, and that's how I feel. Yeah. Like, I'm trying. It's like, okay, today I wanted to work on some math with them, and in between, you know, I did my thing, they did their thing, and I came together, and I'm like, okay, let's hang out, and we did some math and played some games that were kind of education-based, and then it was like, they had enough, I had enough. Because I don't, you know, I'm not a teacher. And like Mike said, like, hats off to those that, you know, can sit there with a room full of 30 kids and keep them focused. I had three. And it was like, okay, I'm done.
Well, it's a different paradigm, right? Like, it's a different thing. It's
absolutely
a different relationship. But okay, maybe, Meg, you can explain to me, maybe, since you say you're a recovering Becky.
Mm.
So I don't understand the Becky mindset. These people who, I don't know what to do. My kids are out of school for 2 weeks. Like, they're just panicking and freaking out like it's the end of the world. Is this just guilt driving these reactions? Like, it's some sort of performative, if I stress like crazy in public now, people won't blame me because my kid doesn't get into Harvard, Yale, or Stanford later. Like, what's going on here?
I, you know, and I'm not going to judge per se, but I think there's a few different points of view that I've seen. First of all, I would love to say, yes, I do love all of our teachers, and dealing with children in particular is very different. I've seen professionals who are professors who are saying that this is how do I deal with a small child? And I can talk to an adult, I can explain complex theory, but I can't break down how to get a shoe on. What's wrong with me, right?
Getting shoes on a little child is surprisingly difficult. That and those little snaps on the onesies.
Okay, so, I'm sorry. I've just got to add this. I have 4 kids, and I have never taught one of them to tie their shoes or ride their bikes. That is totally not my patience level.
Shoes are hard. Why did we end up with these incredibly complex things we need to put on small humans?
So I do get it. It's I think sometimes, yeah, there are some people, and I guess on Twitter there is at least I've noticed there are more people who have more time and money. So sometimes there has been a bit of a wall for some people where it's kind of like, this isn't summer. I didn't have this planned.
Yeah. Right?
My camps are gone. And there's a financial issue too. I mean, I'm in a low income family. We didn't have camps planned, but if I was having that kind of stuff yanked away or travel that you've worked for, that, you know, that can be hard too. So I think some of it might just be parental frustration in general with life these days, or being even just cooped up as an adult. I hope it's not just, oh my gosh, my kids are the worst. I think we're in really trying times as humans. And I think it's probably just a way that it feels socially acceptable to release some of that aggravation inside.
Well, I think you nailed it, Meg. This is about adults not being able to. We have become a society, we've become adults so used to our own privilege, mm-hmm, that we don't know how to cope. We don't know how to be flexible. This is something that took us all by surprise. Right before this podcast, I went live on my Facebook page because I was getting messages from local business owners that are being harassed either for not being open or for being open. And it's just, I get it. You know, your local business that you go to is closed. It's inconvenient for you.
Yeah, you really can't win whatever choice you make.
You know, it's inconvenient for you, but we've lost the ability. Empathy is in short supply. It's like, mm-hmm, they're losing their life savings maybe, right? And so for us parents that maybe we're used to this kind of life of privilege, it's like, this is our schedule. The kids go to school. This is when I, you know, book whatever.
Yeah.
Suddenly that's gone, and we realize we're no better, no different than anybody else. And that's a wake-up call.
That's a very interesting insight, because I wondered, you know, because the March break camps got canceled. And I didn't really go to March break camps when I was a kid. I did it a couple times. I didn't always like it. I was really happy at March break because I just did my own thing. I'm older than sort of the helicopter parent generation. There was no expectation on parents when I was a kid to watch your kids all the time. And so some of my favorite times in childhood was when I was just left to my own devices and I could make a fort out of the couch cushions and bed sheets. You know, I could stack all the toys on the stairs and pretend to be ET. And these are sorts of things that I think some parents would freak out about now because it's mess, right? And I really get the sense that the pressure is coming from other parents in their peer group. That thing you said, Michelle, about, you know, everybody expecting to be Mary Poppins.
Well, so it's the Instagram life. We see the pictures of, you know, those cute pictures of everyone's kids being calm and reading a book and it's story time. Mm-hmm. But what we don't see is the 30 minutes before of them, you know, me screaming at them. And, you know, trying to mop up 5 gallons of water because they were doing a science experiment, right? Or
it's just
trying to drown the cat.
It's just water. Yeah. You're doing well.
Well, and that's, you know, I kind of laughed. It's like my living room right now, every single pillow and blanket in my house is in my living room right now.
Yeah. Because it's pillow fort time. Yeah, see, that's what I used to do. That's what I did as a kid. Meg, what do you think about parents being awful to other parents in this time?
Ooh, I haven't seen a whole lot of it at this point. So I think we do definitely do need to remember compassion before anything else right now, because this is a human situation. We're part of this is definitely illustrating, this is a global community. And as Michelle said, we're all in this thing together, like not just Canadians, but all of us. Those kids were sitting on the couch in that picture. And that's why I was saying full disclaimer on it, because about probably 45 minutes beforehand, I think you probably would have heard me screaming from the street, no standing on the coffee table.
Oh, I assume that.
You gotta be like Elsa up on the high when you're bringing on the snowflakes.
I am under no illusions about kids. I know you only get 20 minutes of quiet at the time. They nap like cats.
But I mean, honestly, just for the parents out there, if you are seeing those photos for people, I think actually those are more like our trophies. Like, look, I had a moment where it was fantastic.
We don't take pictures of the meltdown because we're too busy pulling our hair out, trying to stop them from killing each other, pulling them, you know, from trying to fly down the stairs.
Barf and or snot.
And to put a total damper on it, but also for me with children with autism, there's also, I mean, I have been chastised, and as have I seen other parents, when you do put up pictures of a meltdown, because then you're taking advantage of your child and you're looking for sympathy and they didn't ask to be put on the internet and XYZ. There is a little bit of that for our community as well, where we, you know, sometimes we want to show what real life is, but it's pretty ugly and it can feel kind of icky to watch sometimes. So I think that's also part of it. I think we want to revel in the good stuff. And I don't know, maybe these are the times where every now and again, it's okay to remind ourselves, hey, that was the good moment. It might've been fleeting, but it was the good moment.
See, that I think people's assumptions going into social media have a lot to do with the relationship with social media. Because when you sent me those pictures, I just assumed it was a moment. I mean, I used to teach dance. Aww. So I have seen every kind of tantrum, meltdown, you know, drama. And so I just assumed that, hey, that was a moment, that wasn't all the time. And I was just happy that there was a moment, because there are some days you don't get that moment. You know, even when you only have someone's kid for an hour to 3 hours at the time, their children, their little people, they don't, you know, they don't respond instantly and perfectly to commands. And why do you think make people assume that just because you put up a moment that's your regular, like, every day?
I assume that's just the Instagram. Now, mind you, I was going to say, showing my age, I don't even have an Instagram account, so I don't know. But that's how out of it I am. But, like, in terms of Facebook and things like that, I think, I know that I certainly don't. I'm not under any illusions of what those moments are. I hope other parents are, too. Maybe this is just a time where we remind ourselves of that. Maybe I'm just been through too much at this point in my life, but I just couldn't care about keeping up with stuff like that for myself. Again, when I post stuff like that, it's just because, you know, enjoying the moment.
I mean, it's interesting how people don't recognize, like they don't tell themselves this is a curated reality, that it's not this way all the time, even though everybody does it for, you know, the very good reasons that you guys said, that, you know, these are individuals and they don't want that stuff. You don't want your kids' worst moments on the internet forever. That's and right. I think that's a very, very noble goal that I think more people should consider when they're putting their life online. But Michelle, how do you think the technical term for this is upward social comparisons, and it does lead to decreased opinion of self and possibly depression and anxiety. How do you, since you've got kids of every age range, how do you stop yourself from doing that with other people?
You know, it's interesting. I think because I do have kids of every age range, I have a 6, 8, 14, and 25-year-old. My parenting started way back before social media ever existed. And I know that you know, I've come up from having nothing as a single mom waiting tables and putting myself through school at night with my oldest to having the luxury of working from home today with my three children. So I've kind of run the gamut of, you know, that kind of social, I'm not even quite sure how to say it, you know, like I know how fortunate I am and I know how difficult it is. I have been a wonderful parent and absolutely amazing at sometimes. And I've done stuff that's so inspirational. I want to share it with the world. And there's other times that I find myself, you know, throwing a ball of socks across the room in frustration and just like wanting to run away. I get it. Mm-hmm. And I try to keep those stories to myself, like not to myself, but I keep them personal.
Right.
On my platforms, I share how I feel, but I don't make it personal about my kids. I don't talk individually about, you know, one of my kids, you know, who wets the bed or whatever, because that will follow them for the rest of their life.
Sure.
And, you know, trying to compare myself to other parents, I stopped doing that a long time ago. Because it's a no-win situation. There's always going to be someone better than you. There's always going to be someone more organized than you that has it more, has a harder time than you with more money, more, you know, accessibility, all these things. And we can't do that. We upward compare, but we also downward compare and go, wow, you know what? She's got it so much harder than me. I shouldn't complain. And we can't do that either. We really can't. Our reality is our reality, and how we cope with that is individual. And we just need to start, you know, being nicer to each other. Because, you know, women are bitches. Like, we really are mean to each other.
There's a reason that was the first episode of that podcast.
I loved that episode.
There was a reason. I figure, you know, we start with that, and then I'm getting the audience. I want to listen to this, because if you sort of get that. But, like, why is that? I've seen that. In groups of women, one of the things I like to do least is hang out in groups only of women, because I have nothing to talk about that will be a shared experience in the room other than cats, and that always gets weird. Because, you know, most of the women there, if they play video games, they won't admit it. They have no point of reference to what I do on a daily basis. Meg, why do you think women just... And let's face it, the people posting this are the people writing these articles, they've all been mothers that I've seen. They haven't been dads. I think dads are kind of overwhelmed right now. And they're just, I mean, Craig Melvin of the Today Show of NBC did his show from self-quarantine. He Skyped in and his eyes were just kind of like, I have so much more respect for teachers now. And, you know, dads, it's almost like they get the permission to have Homer Simpson moments, but moms don't. And Meg, why do you think we're still there? Shouldn't this have been, you know, stopped when Betty Friedan wrote The Feminine Mystique?
God. Yeah. Well, just back to what you were talking about. I mean, I was raised by a woman who was in advertising. So I grew up hearing about airbrushing and basically knowing everything was fake. And I just realized that's why I couldn't answer your last question, because I've always looked at social media basically through the same lens as TV in the 80s and 90s. It was kind of like, yeah, it's all pretty much fake. It's all staged. Like, what it's so even influencers, right, which are made to look like real people. I mean, and they are real people. I'm not, they're not robots.
Like, that exactly. Is such a
okay. So that's, yeah, exactly.
No, I technically am an influencer and I don't curate deliberately. There's a reason I've spent most of this week talking about farts, because oh my God. But you know what? Even that's conscious. I chose to put that up there. It wasn't like I left my phone recording and somebody caught me letting it rip a few times and someone saying how awful it reeked. That's a totally different thing. Like, you're controlling that release. Right? It literally,
no pun intended,
in my case. Yeah. But, you know, it's true. And even though we know, we forget, right? Like, why do you think that is? I mean, I just sort of, I guess because I've interviewed so many Hollywood types, you know, I sort of see them backstage and it's like, oh, wow, they even look like normal people when they haven't had 2 hours of hair and makeup.
Yep. Doesn't matter how much surgery you've had, really.
Oh, the surgery sometimes is worse.
Exactly.
Oh.
But I don't know why there's a different standard for women, but I'm feeling suddenly, as I think about my mother's experience, it's like it almost feels like I have forgotten, because I mean, I'm sitting here tonight and, you know, my husband, granted, got swabbed, but I mean, if he's sick, we're all in the same house. We're all sick.
Right.
But I was the one who bathed the kids and made them dinner and did all those other little things, even though I had this going, you know, like 10 minutes later. So right. I'm not sure why we sometimes backslide a little bit, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on, because let's face it, I mean, we are a little bit more enlightened now, and we understand when everybody contributes, it makes things better for everybody. So this is definitely a time where we can reconsider that. When we are all in the home units together, there are a lot of memes out there about domestic violence too. That's kind of scary in and of itself. But we, you know, we need to think about how we're treating each other. And to your point, we're underneath it all. We are all real.
Yeah. So, and
getting under it.
and maybe it's because, I mean, I find the further you get out of the city, the more chill the parenting gets. That obviously is a gross generalization, but maybe it's just because people are raising kids in like downtown condos and they're right on top of each other. Like, I got to admit, if it was two adults and a couple of kids in 900 square feet, I'd probably go a bit bonkers too. But true. I think there's got to be more to it than that. Michelle, do you have any other insights on this?
You know what? I think that's huge. Like, even here in Manitoba, like, I live about 35 minutes outside of Brandon, and we see such a huge difference in parenting styles from where we are in rural, you know, the small town. We've got like 1,000 people in our town to in, you know, the city of Brandon, which only has 50,000. That's how rural we are. If you put that in perspective, if you go a 1.5 hour radius outside of Brandon, there's about 150,000 people in our area.
Yeah.
So we're rural. So we are not, you know, we kind of look at even Brandon people, but I'm sure if I looked at some of the parents of Toronto and went, holy crap, helicopter parents, because you're dealing with a different reality.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with so many different people. You're dealing with the traffic. You're dealing with all of this outside stuff that we don't have to deal with. So, you know, when do my kids start walking to school? The second day of kindergarten, once they learn the way. And like, granted, I live across the street from the school, but still, they walk to school. They go play in the playground. They do all these things that someone in the city would look at and go, oh my God, how could you let that happen? It's just a different reality. And I think that's one thing we have to remember when we're looking at social media or even talking to each other. We have such different realities.
Yeah.
The culture span is a lot more vast than we actually recognize.
Yeah. Do you guys even do play dates in either of your areas? Like, is that a thing?
We do.
Okay.
We do, you know, sometimes it's structured. Sometimes I'll get a text from one of the other parents saying, hey, we're in the schoolyard. Do the boys want to come over? And I just like say, hey, go play.
Yeah. When did that start? Because like when I was a kid, a play date was one kid phoning another kid and saying, you want to come over and play. When did the parents start getting involved?
You know what? I can tell you it happened about, I bet you, oh, Jesse is 25 now. So it really happened about 15 years ago. So when social media, like when the internet really started coming up, we saw this change in parenting because all of a sudden everybody was afraid of everything.
Okay.
Oh, I heard that, you know, there was a white van trying to pick up kids.
Okay.
So then nobody would send their kids out because someone in a, and it's always a white van. Like,
yeah, really? Why is it always a white van?
I don't know. But you know, if I was trying to steal kids, I'd drive a blue van because everyone's afraid of white van. And I don't mean to make light of it, but it really always is, right?
That and, weird gold color that is a non-color. Like,
yeah, you know, like a K car or something.
Yeah.
So it's just, it kind of grew. And the more, you know, the more we use social media and the internet for this 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah.
All this stuff was happening. I'm sorry. You know, I'm an adult survivor of child sexual abuse. That shit was happening 45 years ago. Mm-hmm. We just didn't read about it every day. So
right.
We kind of got this fear embedded in us that if we're not these perfect parents, if we're not doing everything right, sometimes how we're to blame if something bad happens to our kids. And I think for myself, I'm glad. Like, the way I parent my 25-year-old is not the same way I parent my youngest, but I haven't changed that much because I'm looking at some parents now going, okay, relax, man. The anxiety levels in parenting are like through the roof. And I get it. Like, when you're dealing with special needs, Meg, hands off. I've got friends with kids on the spectrum and you guys are freaking heroes. Like, you're rock stars.
Yeah. I mean, Meg, you must see next level anxiety in other parents.
Oh yes. In other parents, not in myself.
Of course. That's a given. Right.
And that's what I was going to say. Like, I'm listening to this and I'm going, yeah, no, I can totally be guilty of this. I have a child with a seizure disorder. So, you know, I have to admit, before she was even, you know, we were looking, I was taking temperatures occasionally. Oh, her cheeks are looking a little flushed. Better check. Right.
But right. Yeah. Seizure, but that's so different. The problem with seizure disorders, I'm going to get in a soapbox right now, cause I used to do epilepsy awareness. People don't realize the spectrum of that kind of thing.
Man.
They think it's like you fall down and thrash around for a bit. No, there are.
Sometimes you can't tell. That's the scary part. Yeah.
Yeah. And suddenly they're just not there for a while and their cheeks get a bit flushed and they make it kind of a weird faraway look in their eyes, but it's not an obvious thing. And there's like four different main subtypes of seizures affecting different parts of the brain and manifesting differently. And I mean, that's in pandemic states like this, this is the time I get really, really frustrated about stigma regarding things like autism, things like seizure disorders. Cause one of the things that with kids with seizures, I know my nephew, he does this chronic like nose wiping gesture. It's just a perseveration, right? It's just the brain hiccuping. He doesn't have a runny nose, but how do you get a kid like that to not touch their face? Like, that's just it, right?
For me, it was teaching hand washing. I saw a little thing where somebody was playing with some soap and pepper, and it kind of demonstrates for kids how, you know, you can, soap will make the germs run away across the top of the water. So doing those little things where, you can kind of teach them. Cause to your point, I can't stop her from doing those types of things. So the best thing I can do is have her wash her hands frequently, be okay. Cause there's some kids who won't even let water go over their hands without having real sensory issues. So, you know, just honestly, even being able to do those things, those are where I count my blessings, because at least I can have her take care of herself as best she can. A little different now that we're locked down, but, you know, before there are reasonable, you know, safety measures you can take. It's a very bizarre situation.
How did you guys feel when the official lockdown came down? Was it a sense of relief of, now I don't have to make that call, or now I'm not the odd parent out? I mean, Michelle, I knew you took proactive steps, but was it sort of okay, it's everybody now?
I was relieved.
Yeah.
Because I was watching, because of where I am, I find that still, even now in rural areas, it's like this disconnect that we're still seeing this as a city problem. And you know, and until we actually have an outbreak or a confirmed case in our region, I don't think people are going to take it as serious as they need to. They're seeing a lot of the, you know, the lockdown that we just declared a state of emergency. I think they're seeing a lot of the closures as an inconvenience, and we're overreacting. Huh. And I've been saying for weeks that the whole point of it is so that we feel like we overreacted. That's right. The goal.
Right.
Yep. So I've been trying to educate people on what this means, you know, flattening the curve, all of that stuff. And so when the state of emergency, I feel bad to admit it, but it just was announced today, I was kind of relieved. And it's like, see, maybe now people will start taking this seriously, because, you know, I had yesterday a retail worker come up to me and asked me if there was anything she could do, because there was people in her store earlier in the day that just said they just got back from Texas.
Yeah.
And she goes, well, why aren't you self-isolating? Oh, we feel fine.
Great.
And so people who have some knowledge and have some awareness are scared, and other people are still dismissing it. So when, you know, they announced they were going to close Manitoba schools, we got a 1 week notice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, people were angry that they were closing schools, or then they were angry that they were closing them fast enough. So when they made that call, I was kind of relieved, because I didn't want to be the one that seemed to be overreacting alone.
Right. Right. Meg, you must assume that there are people who just came up from the U.S. being in Windsor. I mean, Windsor, you can see the Michigan car companies from Windsor. Like,
yeah, so Michigan, close. Yeah, Michigan has about 950 healthcare workers that come over from Windsor every day.
Yeah.
So they were also depending on us too. So making sure that there were some little caveats in what happened was very crucial for them. And that's part of it, is that there's a lot of people who are just doing self-isolation and self-quarantine now because they're going for work every day. So essentially their car would be considered contaminated, their house would be considered contaminated, but they can still, as long as they're just going for work and then coming home.
Right.
And to your point, like, this is how we assume our family got kind of put in this group. It's just people do travel to shop just to get groceries because some stuff's cheaper, or kids' clothing, or whatever it may be. And that has been hugely problematic. And as Michelle said, you don't want to be the person who's like, everybody needs to stop everything now. But like, that's how we've kind of felt, because the sooner we do clamp down, the less time, hopefully, we will have to spend like this.
Exactly.
If we can all just follow the rules together. It's just one of those times we do need to recognize there's a greater good that is at play here.
Right.
I was going to say, just one little thing about kids. Like, yeah, I had a child who was in Toronto on play dates, because some people, to your point, everyone has a different idea of how serious it is. And I think hopefully now we can all agree that this is a no fooling situation. This is real.
There's probably some very tense joint custody arrangements going on right now, because one parent is, you know, oh, it's nothing, and the other is wash everything unclean. Yeah. And like, man, that's tough, right? Because again, you can't have that fight in front of the kid.
No. You know what scares me, and I don't want to, you know, get on a soapbox because it's a whole different podcast, but we are making these assumptions. We're coming from loving homes, and we're talking about how we're dealing with it as parents and trying to do the best for our families. But the reality is that so many people, especially, you know, in Manitoba and Saskatchewan and our rural areas, where the per capita average of intimate partner violence is excruciatingly high, these kids are at home with parents. It's not a safe, loving environment. And it's, you know, we're sitting here, you know, talking about how we're going to teach our kids math. And there's a lot of kids out there that just aren't even safe.
I want lunch. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a reality. It's like, doesn't matter if your kid, you know, is not doing 6 hours of your structured schoolwork and you're letting them watch too much TV and eat too many Twinkies, you're still doing a great job, Mom.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I saw a thing that domestic violence shelters are actually saying they need more funding because they expect to get increased demand because as people are in close quarters and, you know, financial hardship increases, they're going to see an increase in abuse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they are going to have to. Fortunately, now there's fewer wards. Like, most of the shelters are private rooms because they just call them crisis shelters now. They're not women shelters the same way. But, you know, there's still some shared facilities. They still have to. It's the exact same issues that nursing homes get into. Yeah. And it's going to be a tough time to be a domestic violence worker right now. Because, I mean, for understandable reasons, there's going to be an uptick. As much as we wish there wasn't, those situations are real. I'm glad that, you know, the various agencies are taking this seriously. I know there's a huge concern with Indigenous populations.
Yep, absolutely. And it is one of those things, you know, and it frustrates me when I see those jokes. It's like, and I get it. People laugh because they're scared. People laugh because they're frustrated, but there is the flip side to it that, we're blessed to be sitting here talking about, you know, our ability to be at home with our kids. And it's a different perspective to kind of look at. And it's, you know what, we just need to stop being so damn hard on ourselves.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see, I said this in the previous podcast too, an increased appreciation for the person who does the cooking in a house, does the laundry in the house. You know, that doesn't just happen. It is work. And, you know, for people who aren't the primary caregiver, the primary housekeeper, since you're home, help out if you can, because it is, you know, being at home more means there's more to do around the house. And I'm sure that that person who's doing a lot of extra unpaid work would appreciate the help, especially if you don't know how to do it and are learning to do laundry properly for the first time in your life. Don't put the reds in with the whites.
Well, just to put a little bit of a lighter spin on that, yeah. We had that conversation this afternoon. My 14-year-old daughter told my 6-year-old son to go get dressed because he does not like wearing clothes. And he walks around in his underwear as much as possible. And I told her to leave him alone. He was doing his part to relieve my workload, because the less clothes he wore, the less laundry I have to do. So, we all got to do our part.
All these people working from home are going to understand the glory of pajama pants as day wear.
Yeah. What do you think I'm wearing right now?
Oh, I was until like just before we did the last podcast, Michelle. Like,
there we go.
It was like some days it's like, is anybody going to see me below the shoulder? Pajama party. Yeah. It means less laundry.
That's right.
It's not just comfort. It means less laundry. And it's a real change. I mean, I think hopefully people are going to start to get a different appreciation for what it takes to sort of be a family now and sort of appreciate the moments, going back to that thing we were all chuckling about before. Because, you know, if life were all good moments, we wouldn't appreciate the good moments, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's wrap up. Ladies, Michelle, Meg, final words. Michelle, what's the closing message you want to leave with?
I think that we need to just be nice to ourselves and to our families and realize that, you know what, I know it's stressful. You might be worried about money. You might be worried about your job. You might be working from home trying to figure out how you have to manage. And the reality is you don't. The house does not need to be clean. The kids do not have to have 7 hours of structured lesson plans. You do not need to be Mary Poppins. If you want to eat chips for lunch and watch Disney movies with your kids, you know what? They'll probably love you even. Those are memories, right? This is a chance to make memories. And there's always a time to make more money. There's always a time to get more education and read more books. But this is what they're going to remember. And what do you want them to remember about you?
Meg?
For all my special needs parents out there, prioritize yourself. You know, this is a very intense situation. Make sure you're sleeping. Make sure you're eating. To Michelle's point, if you just want to eat chips for lunch, that's great. At least you're getting something in you. You can't pour from an empty cup. And yeah, our kids are the most important thing. Everything else will take care of itself. So connect with those that make you feel better. Call your friends or Skype with your family or whatever your outlet is. Play music, sing to yourself while you have a spare moment. Mm-hmm. Whatever makes a smile come on your face, and the kids and yourself will get through this. It's just, as Michelle said, it's a time to make different memories. Find the things that are great for your family.
And remember, everybody is having meltdowns, even if you can't see them. Yeah.
Exactly.
Ladies, thanks so much, Michelle.
Thank you.
This has been Hey Ladies on the FU Network, funetwork.tv, FU Network TV at patreon.com. Check out our store, become a Patreon supporter. I know everybody's going to have a money crunch, but we appreciate any of the support you can give us. Ladies, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This is fun! The FU Network.